And Mr. Bel Castro?
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning to you. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
No, Your Honor.
Then, Mr. Bruno, you may approach and you may proceed.
All right, thank you. May it please the court, my name is Jason Bruno, here on behalf of Appellant 407 North 117th Street, LLC. We are here today on a straightforward issue of law, with the question being whether the corporate veil can be pierced against someone other than a non-shareholder or owner. The district court found that it cannot. We think that was error and contrary to the express holding of this court, including in Medlock, where this court said, legal ownership, while relevant, is not a dispositive factor and does not preclude the finding of alter ego. If you review the cases on piercing the corporate veil, you'll see that the critical issue or the critical factor is control. I cite the Dahlback decision in my brief, which gives a pretty good discussion or analysis about the control factor. And the focus on control is consistent with the principles underlying the equitable doctrine of piercing the corporate veil, which is designed to prevent bad actors from doing bad things and then hiding behind the corporate form.
I know the parties focus in their briefs on this issue of piercing the corporate veil versus a non-shareholder. Is that the only basis the court entered its summary judgment?
In our opinion, yes. And it had to be because the court's position was, well, Mr. Harper and Mr. McGill are not shareholders.
Or directors or officers.
Well, I think the finding that they weren't directors or officers wasn't exactly accurate. But I think the court stopped there because it felt as a matter of law, we couldn't get the relief we were seeking. And there was plenty and abundance of evidence in the record, at least to demonstrate. Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor, go ahead.
So did the court decide just on the non-shareholder issue, or did it expand it beyond to directors and officers?
I think it might have gone that far, but I'm not sure that was the intent because I...
Directors and officers are not shareholders.
Correct.
They're not owners.
Correct.
So did the court look at this as holding a non-shareholder responsible?
I think the court's finding was you have to be an owner or a shareholder in order to pierce the corporate veil. I think that was the premise from the court. I think that's the specific supplemental briefing that the court requested, and that was our directive and understanding of the court's ruling. But to the extent the court found that they have to be officers or directors, it's the same argument. That's not correct. The critical factor, as established by all the cases, is whether people are in control. And if you look at the case, it was Peter Kiewit that interprets this court's decision in Medlock in the United States District Court. They talk about how, hey, the person at issue in that case set the corporation up where he didn't have control or wasn't a shareholder or wasn't an officer or wasn't a director. And they said, no, that doesn't work. The critical factor is you have to be the one in control, and if you are and you use the corporate form to commit a fraud, then you can be held liable. And that makes sense. Otherwise, the policy of piercing the corporate veil would be defeated. All you could do is get bad actors who have smart lawyers, and they could set up a shell company or interrelated companies.
So what evidence did you put on in this case that these two gentlemen were in control?
Their own admissions and testimony that they made the decisions, including that impacted Planet Group, which was the shell here. What happened in this case is there's an interrelated group of companies. They have a difficult bookkeeping structure. We offered all of their financial records, but if you dig into the facts, what you will see is Planet Group had about $13.5 million in revenues in 2014. They enter into a lease agreement with my clients, obligating them to pay about $37,000. And sometime in 2017 or 2018, Mr. McGill and Mr. Harper, by their own admission, were involved in the decision just to make Planet Group go poof.
So if we look at the factors in consideration of piercing the corporate veil, what factors weigh in favor of your position?
Undercapitalization.
Doesn't undercapitalization usually deal with the time the corporation or LLC is created?
It does. That's correct. Okay. But it also
is there any evidence in this case that there was ownership or control at that point?
Yes. Not at the creation of the company, no. But the other argument was you have to have the company have sufficient assets to pay its assets as they become due. So, and then the most important factors...
Assets to pay its debts as they come due?
Its obligations, correct. You can't enter into a lease with my clients for $700,000 when you have negative equity. That's one of the factors the court should consider. But in this case, what happened is they took the assets, all of the good out of Planet Group, and they put them in their interrelated companies for their own personal benefit.
So that is the key. They're diverting funds from Planet Group to someone else for their own personal benefit.
Correct, but not just some...
What evidence is there in the record about their personal benefit?
The evidence is undisputed that they had control or ownership in the other entities that they diverted these assets to. Undisputed, they...
Ownership?
Yes.
What evidence is there they had ownership interest in any of these other corporations or LLCs?
Maybe not ownership, but they were certainly officers and directors, and they held themselves out as the managers of the partners. They admitted that they made the decisions, including the decisions to divert the revenues and not pay my clients.
The district court specifically found that there was no evidence in the record that the two individuals diverted any assets of Planet Group for their own personal use.
Well, respectfully, with the district court only looked at the facts that were presented in the defendant's summary judgment brief, which we pointed out in our brief. He didn't consider any of our statement of facts or our volume of records, including depositions, evidence of the transfers, their own admissions. All it did was take their self-serving affidavits, and that's one of our complaints.
What evidence is there in the record that they diverted the funds for their own personal use?
Well, it went to their interrelated companies and entities, which they benefit from, and that's sufficient.
What evidence is there that they benefited from those other entities?
Because they had interest in those other companies.
Evidence is there that they had interest in those other companies?
Their own admissions, the financial records, their own deposition testimony.
So they were owners of those other companies?
I don't think they were.
Were they shareholders of those other companies?
I think they were share. I think they were members of those other companies, but I'm not 100% sure. I just know that they admittedly benefited from those other entities, including specifically West Partners. They held themselves out expressly as partners in West Partners, which was the entity that got basically all of the benefit and the revenues. And that's enough. If you look at the case law, these very similar circumstances where you're shifting around assets to related entities just by bookkeeping entries is sufficient to pierce the corporate veil.
So if we were to throw in with you that non-shareholders could be held responsible in a piercing corporate veil, wouldn't West Partners be kind of a prime target?
It could be, but it's not the only target because we're going to be making the same argument.
There was evidence that money came from Planet Group that went to West.
Correct. And West is, I'm not saying West isn't a responsible party, but here the case law and the corporate veil lets us go after the individuals responsible. So not only did they shift those assets, but even today, Mr. Harper and Mr. McGill are admitting that, hey, Planet Group still has $60,000 that we control where it goes. We may demand upon them to pay it to us under the lease and the judgment that was entered by the court below, and they still won't pay it. So they're actively obstructing our payment. So if the court has any further questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Otherwise, I'd like to reserve my remaining time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Belcastro, good morning to you again.
Good morning, Your Honor.
And you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. Good morning, Counsel. Your Honors, may it please the Court. My name is Gabriel Belcastro, and I represent Appellees Mark Harper and Art McGill in this matter. On Appellee's motion for summary judgment, the District Court correctly concluded that, one, Nebraska law does not permit the corporate veil to be pierced to hold non-shareholder officers and directors personally liable for the debts of a corporation, and, two, that appellant failed to carry its burden to plead or prove that Harper or McGill exercised any control over Planet Group as would amount to a fraud or other wrong in contravention of the appellant's rights. Accordingly, we pray that this court affirm the district court's granting of Appellee's motion for summary judgment.
Though we've never said out loud that a non-shareholder could be held responsible in a Pearson and Corporate Veil matter. Have other states taken a different position?
I believe other states are in a mixed bag on that, Your Honor. I would note for the court's attention that the Northern District of Iowa, a federal court in Iowa, recently reviewed Nebraska case law, interpreted Nebraska case law, and determined that Pearson the Corporate Veil doctrine cannot be used against non-shareholder officers and directors. I believe there's also authority in Texas and a few other states that say that.
What's the majority position?
You know, Your Honor, I'm actually not sure on that. I know that the appellant cited some authority in their brief from Idaho. We cited some authority in our brief from Texas and elsewhere. It appears that the majority position is that you have to be an owner in the entity in order to have the veil pierced against you, and that makes sense for policy reasons. And
sense for fraud or sham reasons?
I'm sorry,
Your Honor? Does it make sense for fraud reasons or sham reasons?
Yes, Your Honor, it does. And the reason being, actually,
if you're clever enough not to be the shareholder and you're using it as an alter ego, that's just the end of the story?
Well, no, Your Honor. And actually,
isn't the whole purpose of the piercing the corporate veil to do equity and to really hold the person responsible for the fraud or the deceit of the other party?
Yes, that is true, Your Honor. However, I will say that the Court of Appeals actually did address this question already in the Huffman case, where the court explained that, quote, where a tort action is brought against an officer or director, there is no need to pierce the corporate veil, and liability will be imposed if the elements of the tort are satisfied. So, in other words, if there really is fraudulent conduct that takes place, provided that the plaintiff can establish a factual basis to support those claims, then you don't need to pierce the corporate veil. You can hold an officer or director personally liable for the torts that they actually commit.
This isn't a tort case, though.
No, that's right, Your Honor. And actually, the district court correctly observed that that fraud was not properly pled in this case. There's no evidence in the record that any fraud actually took place. And for that reason, that was another basis that the district court relied on to say that there's nothing here.
This was decided on summary judgment.
Yes.
You have more familiarity with the record than I, but are you representing to this court that there's nothing in the record that would indicate preferential transfers?
So far as preferential transfers, I know that there were secured debts from West Partners and truthfully, Your Honor, I don't know all the ins and outs of the particularities of when these debts were incurred to West Partners. I do know that there were a number of debts from or to West Partners that remain unsatisfied or were paid at pennies on the dollar. There were capital expenditures. West Partners injected a tremendous amount of capital into Planet Group that was complete loss to West Partners. And there's also a claim from the state of Nebraska in the amount of approximately $1 million that is also outstanding. So the representation that, you know, this was Planet Group just picked 407 to not pay is not true. There were a variety of debts, and, you know, that's part of business sometimes when
Is this a massive insolvency and
in terms of Planet Group being insolvent? Planet Group is insolvent, as far as I'm aware. Yeah, I think that they're still, as far as I'm aware, you know, they're trying to figure out how to pay off debt to the extent that they can. But the ultimate question here is whether Harper and McGill are personally responsible for debts that were incurred prior to their arrival in the corporation. And that's
doesn't
really...
Doesn't it matter, too, when the divert... If there were funds diverted, when those funds were diverted, and who was in charge of the company at that point?
Sure, Your Honor, and that would have been the plaintiff's burden to establish those facts, and that's not taken place.
We could all agree that there were funds shipped to West Partners to pay off foreclosure. I'm not sure what secured assets were foreclosed, I don't understand that. But that happened in 2017. Your clients were in charge of the company, Planet Group, at that point. So is there an argument to be made that there were improper diverting of assets during that period of time to the detriment of 407 and State of Nebraska and other creditors?
No, Your Honor, I don't think so. Just for the reason being that Harper and McGill were there's no evidence that these were preferential to benefit themselves personally.
District Court seems to glom on to that and make a determination there was no evidence in the record that McGill and Harper benefited personally.
That's right, and there's absolutely no evidence in the record that they received any property of any kind from Planet Group. They never received a salary. There's no evidence that they personally were benefiting from any of this, including the assertion that they're somehow benefiting by participation in West Partners. There's no evidence of that.
So this is just voluntary service on their part?
I'm sorry?
So this is just voluntary service on their part?
Yes, yeah, and there was testimony of that effect in the record. Mr. Harper testified in his deposition that he was essentially trying to do a favor to clean up a mess and get Planet Group kind of straightened out and get right the ship, so to speak.
Well, isn't the question on summary judgment whether there's a dispute of fact? It's not what the facts are, it's whether there's a dispute at all. And in this evidence, aren't there disputed facts about who benefits?
No, Your Honor, because the testimony and the undisputed evidence is that Harper and McGill never personally benefited from from any of the transactions that, you know, allegedly took place. There's no evidence that they received any property, that they were around when the actual underlying debts were incurred. There's no evidence to that effect. That was plaintiff's burden to establish and to point out facts to that effect, and those are not present in the record. I will say also, this court has held that the general rule is that complete and separate entity, or that a corporation is viewed as a complete and separate entity from its shareholders and officers who are not, as a rule, liable for the debts and obligations of the corporation.
Didn't the Court of Appeals recently talk about this horizontal piercing and sister companies and kind of multiple entities owning and loaning monies back and forth to each other? Didn't they deal with that in the Moss case recently?
Yes, they did, Your Honor. And if I may, I'm sorry.
What did they determine?
I believe the appellant actually cites to the Moss case in their brief, and there were some isolated comments about control that were kind of plucked out of the opinion. But the appellant's brief completely ignores the four preceding pages where piercing the corporate veil factors are discussed in the context of shareholders, which again is kind of the gravity of the question here. And in the Moss case, the plaintiff sought to collect a judgment she obtained in federal court after prevailing in a wrongful termination case, and there was some shifting of money around. But at the end of the day, all the interested parties that the plaintiff was going after were shareholders at the relevant time.
All the other companies were shareholders?
Well, the underlying Mr. Gerbaki.
Right. But the other companies, were they shareholders?
That I don't remember. I don't recall. But I do know that the control aspect of it didn't seem to be the center of the court's reasoning in that case. It had more to do with the factors that are well established in the case law, which all center around shareholders and the activity of shareholders.
So, why does the law allow the corporate veil to ever be pierced?
So the corporate veil, in terms of essentially a policy, is, you know, shareholders have distinct rights and responsibilities to the corporation that are distinct from those of officers and directors. And, you know, for instance, shareholders are the one who are responsible for ensuring that the corporation is capitalized to begin with. They're the ones who receive distributions if there's corporate success, and they're the ones who run the risk of losing their investment if the corporation goes under. So they're in a unique position relative to officers and directors who just owe their obligations to the corporation itself. And, you know, maybe they receive a salary, maybe they don't. In this case, they did not. But, you know, piercing the corporate veil is, as the Court of Appeals and this court has observed, is a tool that courts use to prevent shareholders who are not normally liable for corporate debts from hiding behind the corporate shield. And it's specifically for shareholders for those reasons. I see I'm out of time. So if there's any other questions, I'd be happy to address those. Otherwise, I would just ask the court to affirm the district court's decision. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
1:23, Your Honor.
1:23, Mr. Bruno. We'll give you 1:30.
All right. The court raised a couple of good points. The first was whether Planet Group was insolvency, and the answer is yes. But the reason it was insolvent is because Mr. McGill and Mr. Harper decided to strip away all the revenues, strip away the sales of its assets, and leave only the obligation to my client. Mr. Belcastro said Planet Group had a variety of debts. I don't think the record's going to support that. It had one real debt, the lease, our lease obligation, which is now a judgment obligation.
There was a claim by State of Nebraska for $1 million, isn't there?
That's what they argue. We're not sure, and we weren't aware of that at the time. But the other debt, the big debt, was what Mr. Balcastro says is those secured obligations. Those were obligations to West Partners. So all Mr. Harper and Mr. McGill did is said, well, no, you're going to pay us back or our interrelated companies back, but we're not going to pay for this lease anymore, and Planet Group is no longer going to continue to operate. And even if Mr. McGill and Mr. Harper aren't owners, they don't have to receive a direct benefit, even though we believe the record clearly establishes that they did. I cite a case in my brief on page 20 that says the transfer by the debtor corporation of its property to a second corporation when both are controlled by the same person and or the manipulation or stripping of assets to avoid the demands of creditors. That is exactly what happened here, and that is exactly the purpose of the corporate veil theory. Because of the decisions and the control employed by Mr. Harper and Mr. McGill, my clients were getting paid $37,000 one day. The next day they weren't, because all of the assets, or most of the assets and revenues, went to their affiliated companies. We're asking this court reverse and remand for a trial on whether the corporate veil should be pierced. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Council, that concludes arguments in 407 North 117th Street, LLC versus Harper. So you are excused, and the court is adjourned.